Well, happy fucking happy hour. Chris Pena is in the house, everybody. Woo! Comedian extraordinaire. Beloved of every single one of our comedy beloveds. You aren't connected to me as if you had come out of my vagina, sir.
Just get
into your microphone. Just get on it.
Let's not get into it.
Rick Overton,
Stephanie.
John Fugel saying, everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
We're exchanging bodily fluids already. We have been scissoring each other professionally for years.
Well, you know, I've been a big fan of yours ever since you called Chris Matthews a tool.
Yeah, that was the last time I was on Chris Matthews' show. Thanks for bringing that up.
Right. No, I thought that was courageous, fearless.
Yes, it was fearless, also leads to me
Being silly and
getting
fired.
I was in the lead up to the Iraq War, and I was just like, fuck them. They were all, and I was kind of a joke. It was a joke that went awry, Sean.
I literally screamed in my living room, yes!
Good.
But I just, because I was like, fuck you guys. You were all cheerleaders for the Iraq War. He can say now he was against it, and I guess then later he was and whatever. But I was like,
Yeah. You didn't, you called out the BS.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm never invited anywhere now, because I'm calling out the bullshit about this illegitimate president in Russia. Okay, so we're recording on the day of this insane fucking news conference. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. He's unhinged.
He's fucking out of his mind.
Unbelievable.
Ranting and raving. And he says, you know, people are saying he isn't ranting or raving. I'm not ranting or raving. But I think he's totally lost it.
It's fucking springtime for Hitler. He asked the black reporter, can you set up a meeting for me with the black congressional caucus? Are they your friends?
Don't you know them?
We're like,
oh my God.
What did you just say?
Well, you know, it's his whole thing, their whole idea is to throw out as much crap as they can, the shiny keys in front of your face, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, the other hand is, you know, doing oil deals probably with Russia.
Right.
Well, you know, probably a year ago.
Right.
So, you know, it is happening fast and furiously, and that is kind of mind-boggling, and I wake up every morning and go, what next? You know, locusts? What's going to happen next?
Are the locusts here yet?
I mean, I haven't seen this kind of rage and division and hatred in this country since, this morning at Trader Joe's parking.
Yeah, right. That's
and
bad. Right.
That is.
Fuck those people.
Those people are evil.
Right.
Why is Trader Joe's the worst?
I think it's minimal parking spaces and people are in a rush always when they're buying food.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they just have no patience.
Yeah. Gotta get those are my goddamn dried cranberries. Get out.
Get out of my way.
Get out of my way. But he's brought out the worst in us. He really has.
You know, and I think it's made us stronger. The marches have really been encouraging. That's what I love seeing.
Yeah.
Women and a man out there going out, this is enough. We've gone crazy. And so I think, you know, that's going to be a building up of a movement.
Yeah.
If it isn't already, into something that hopefully it will be maybe, we can't have a third party. Maybe it'll build into a third party, you know, some independent.
Listen, Chris, focus with me, motherfucker.
Okay. Oh, we can say that.
Get this motherfucking lunatic traitor out of the White House. Let's not talk about third parties.
I think he will not see the day where he has a State of the Union speech.
No, you tweeted Trump's AOL greeting, you've got blackmail. Is that?
Hey!
Do you know that for a fact, Chris?
Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah, when he won, I wrote, at least he won the unpopular vote.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
oh my God, I love they fact-checked in real time. I had the biggest electoral. They're like, no.
Actually.
No, you didn't. Well, it was the information I was given. This is what I was given. Fucking idiots. What fucking idiot gave me that? I don't, I said Republican. Yeah, not even Republicans. No, not even that. No, not even big for a Republican. It's like what I was given. Oh my God. How insane was the. I know, we happen to be recording the day of. This will drop this weekend, but it's still going to be a little like. What?
Yeah, it's hard
to. We accidentally elected our fucking drunk uncle. It's really just like Jesus fucking Christ.
And Kellyanne Conway?
Right.
I mean, this is ridiculous. This is like a perfume spritzer from Nordstrom's telling us what the hell is going on.
Obsession from Calvin Klein.
Deception.
Yeah, no, we know. We know you're obsessed with him.
Deception.
Deception. Oh, that's good. We just wrote a bit. Deception from Calvin Klein.
Hi, I'm Kellyanne Conway for Deception.
Hi, I'm Kelly Kay.
Try it. You're going to like it. You're going to like it.
My eye.
Ow. God. But, you know, can I just say something? Because you're out there on the front lines of comedy with all our heroes. You know, Robin Williams, Rick Overton, and John Fugelsang, and everybody that's been out there. And you know what? Can I just say, comedy is empowering the media, not the other way around. It's not until Kellyanne Conway became a laughingstock on Saturday Night Live that the regular media had the courage to say CNN and Morning Joe, we're not having her on.
Well,
it's like you didn't fucking have the balls. You said she was a hero and a brilliant, oh my God, oh, this glorious victory, you know, look how good she is at this. And like, I'm like, no, she's a fucking liar. She's always been lying. Yeah. And you just were sucking up for access.
Yeah, no, it's I think a lot of comics are truth tellers, and so they can cut through because satire.
That's why I don't get invited anywhere. That's why I'm in my basement.
And so I think, you know, like Bill Maher and the others who have carte blanche, they have a venue where they're seen by millions. You can really get some serious shit across to people through humor, and I'm all for that. I'm constantly doing like little tiny clubs testing out the newest Trump joke.
And you're trying to help. You tweeted, Stephen Miller is in autumn. He should have gone with the brown shirt. That was nice. That was helpful.
It just one-liners are pretty good, if you can get them.
But he was just terrifying, wasn't he? I think, like, you could tell that he was really fucking coked up and thought he was doing fucking great, man. You will not question his authority. Yeah, fucking nailed it. Yeah, Trump loved it. Here we go. Next one.
I wish he was on coke.
And you will not deny it. Ha! Fucking nailed that one. And then he got home, and he's like, wait a minute. Everyone's laughing.
Right.
The medium shot of him, I just went, look at those dead eyes.
Look at the dead eyes.
Dead
like
heart.
A doll's eyes. Soul like a doll's eyes.
like a doll's eyes. I'll get your shark for you.
You're going to need a bigger boat. The Titanic's sinking.
I'll get the dorsal and the butthole. The whole thing. I'll get the whole damn.
Yeah, you're just like... Everybody they trot out, you're like, okay, Kellyanne's toast. No one fucking believes her. Sean Spicer's a disaster. Melissa McCarthy's like eating him alive. And now you're like, who the fuck's this guy?
Melissa McCarthy should put this into series every week.
I know.
Comes out and does the week in review. All the, because look how many subjects they cover by her stint as Spicer. Spicy.
But don't you feel like this is the worst thing you could do to comedians is go, don't dial it back, Melissa McCarthy, and don't.
I don't.
And also, he doesn't like when women play men. And we're like,
oh, really?
Wow.
Men. This is fantastic.
Men used to play women during Shakespearean days.
Right.
So,
right.
Why not?
Yeah, but I mean, that's what they want to do. Is what he wants to keep poking the intelligence community, the press, and comedians.
Good luck,
motherfucker! Oh, motherfucker! You're going down, man.
Yeah, wrong demographic, though.
Right? Nice try. Oh my God! I mean, this is the thing. It's like amazing for comedians, but horrible for America.
And it's coming so fast and furious. I mean, back in the day, I used to be a contributing writer to David Letterman's late show.
You wrote, wait a minute, hang on, I've done some research on you, sir.
Please, I have an FBI background check.
But the first joke you wrote was about Trump. Your first joke about Letterman, said, well, it's Groundhog Day, we can expect another 6 weeks of winter here, because that thing on Trump's head saw its shadow.
Hey!
Paul, how are we doing on time?
And then when Pence was admonished after the Hamilton cast, gave him a civics lesson, right?
Yes, Lassie.
Oh,
I remember that.
Come here, little Sheba. No, those are my people. Don't. Okay.
All right, sorry. Go
your
ahead.
Your dog
Vanessa,
just
don't
smelled
get
my
competitive, but I'm drinking your rosé.
Oh, man.
I'm coming for your bourbon next, motherfucker.
You know what?
I love
bring
it. On ice.
Survival of the fittest around here,
bring
motherfucker.
It.
Let's do this.
Bring it.
Sorry. Go ahead. Family fight.
What was it? Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot what I was talking about.
Family fight. Sorry. We're fine. Go ahead. No, you were saying we fucked that all up. We're sorry. We're such
your
bad
first
family.
Letterman joke.
Letterman.
Yes. Letterman.
I don't feel we were encouraged to write Donald Trump jokes, but he liked them. He bought them. You know, he he said them. So
remember, that's when it was funny that he would never
hair. It was just hair. Oh, this is what I was going to say. The when Pence got admonished at Hamilton,
and, yes,
the whole cast gave him a civics lesson, and Trump heard about this and immediately wanted to construct a fourth wall in every theater across the United States. And I thought that was wrong.
Sorry.
Pause for silence.
See,
can we?
Why? Yeah. We have a different, because we're out here in Hollywood. We have a different, like, you know, when people say, oh, you know, it's going to be a bad 4 years, or we're like, 4 years? Do we have 4 days left in this shit? Like, we're like, we're burning daylight, people. Let's wrap. Let's wrap.
Now, I think Trump is history. I think he's on his way to just going, okay. I'm not resisting anymore. I'm going to step down.
Here's
he's going to have to, because it's got to be a conflict of interest, and obviously he hasn't shown his taxes for a very good reason.
Right.
There's a lot.
Do you think he thinks he did really good today in the press conference?
Oh yeah.
It took him like 5 questions about the same thing to finally say, you know, what was really on his mind, and that is still convoluted and weird to me. So, because what he said to, the thing about Flynn, you know,
right.
Flynn lying to Pence or not giving him the full story.
But you've been very mean
so long,
to him.
You know, he's a very fine man.
He's fantastic, and you've been mean to him. Why did you fire him?
League.
Well, it was unacceptable. He lied to... What he did was actually a good thing. It wasn't a bad thing. It was a good thing what he did. It's a real good thing what you did. Yeah. It's a good thing what you did.
Rosie O'Donnell.
No, you know, did he say
goes off
about
into
her?
Things that happened years ago.
Right.
Does anybody want to bring up again, you were the idiot that said Donald Trump, that Barack Obama was not born in America?
Right.
Uh-huh. I mean, is that and he kept that up for 6 years.
People, are they surprised now that we've installed by accidentally a ridiculous conspiracy theorist
my brother who
that
lives,
is completely unprepared for?
Yeah, my brother lives in the south of France, calls me every other day going, what are you doing over there?
What happened?
Are you crazy? You know, and his hat spins around his head. And, and he's so amazed that we got duped. You know,
I know he's been good for the lapel business because people have gotten their lapels ripped off overseas. I'm sorry, I ripped your lapels off.
Thriving lapel business.
You're going to need to
overseas. And see, those could have been American lapel jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
motherfucker.
Fuck them.
All right, hang on.
Yeah.
Let's review your past, shall we?
Oh.
Chris Pena was born in Ohio, moved to Brentwood, California at 10, and then moved to Beverly Hills at 12. What happened? Did things go wrong that you had to live in Brentwood?
Well, Mom wanted to step things up.
Did something
Brentwood
go wrong?
Brentwood is not good for Chris.
What happened that you had to move from Brentwood to Beverly Hills?
My dad got a raise.
Oh, you poor thing.
Sorry.
We said, oh, my
Where's
God.
Where's the little, really tiny violin? Do we have that? Oh, my God. What was that like, the transition from Bel Air to Beverly Hills?
I went to the same school, Beverly Hills Catholic School.
Mm-hmm.
I still have my number on my wrist here.
Mm-hmm.
I know, that's a horrible fucking joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only school that had like cyclone fencing and barbed wire for an elementary school running around the perimeter of the school, and I thought to myself, oh, my God.
Was that to keep out people
parents
were out, millionaires, not billionaires?
You come out you come out at recess, and you see some of the kids kind of hanging over the barbed wires. They try to escape, obviously gunned down by the nun up in the gun tower.
Yeah.
But
fucking goddamn Sister Charles Bronson.
No, actually, I was
Sister Charles Bronson, don't fuck with her.
So when we moved from Ohio... Thank God, because my mom was so smart to get us the hell out of the Cleveland suburb of Shaker Heights, which was quite nice, but She hated scraping the ice on the windshield to take me to kindergarten in the morning, turning on the car for 20 minutes
that lazy
to warm it
bitch.
Up. I know. She was such a princess.
I'm sorry.
But she's been the motivating. My dad would, I got a good job here in Ohio. I don't know. No, baby, we're going to California. We're in our 30s. You know, the future is our oyster.
Wait, go back. Who got what job? What happened? You were in Ohio.
Okay, so my dad had a good job there. My mom said, I can't
Doing
stand
what?
Ohio.
Doing
what? Do you blame her? I was, now like, 8, and they my dad got a great job in L.A. So we
Wait,
moved.
Doing what?
He was a general sales manager for a...
Spy. Fucking
large,
bullshit, right? Well, this is too long to answer.
Sales.
Too long to answer. My dad was
large
in some
carpet.
Sort of general sales.
General manager of sales for the mafia.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
He got a lot of barber shops and... no.
Bullshit, too long to answer. Okay. All right, anyway, whatever your story is.
Beverly Hills, it was actually, very low profile back then. The only thing that caused attention to us that made us kind of different was the fact that there was a show called Beverly Hillbillies. And, oh, God, okay. And they stereotyped a lot of stuff. But, I still have a lot of the same friends I grew up with. I love them all.
Well, let's talk about that. Your first friend in California was Desi Arnaz Jr., as most of ours are.
I know. Yeah. It was wild.
So you grew up in Lucy's house, basically.
I did. I had grand pleasure of going there every morning because I'd ride my bike down Benedict Canyon, park it there in Desi's garage, and then go in the station wagon with a few other kids in the neighborhood who lived there. And we'd all go to school together. So, Beverly Hills Catholic. So, I remember for the first 2-3 weeks of school, I thought, I should, get along with a lot of these kids. Nobody would talk to me.
Right.
And I was like coming home every day going, Mom, this sucks. In Beverly Hills, little brats, little
fucking
snobs,
assholes.
Rich fucks.
Fucking 90210.
And I used that language at 8. Mm-hmm. At 10, whatever it was. And I said, Mom, these fucking kids. And she said, just hang in there, be funny, be yourself, and be, and study. That was a big thing in our house. Don't be
a dick.
Dildo.
It's like, son, just don't be a dick.
No, don't be a dick.
Good luck. And don't be a dick.
And be clever.
Cool.
And artful. So I made this kid who was kind of roly-poly laugh on the playground one day. And he turned around and said, do you want to come to my pool party? And I said, sure. When is it? On Friday after school. Sure, my mom will take me. Great. Okay. And so I run home and I tell Mom and I go, I met a guy. What's his name? Dizzy.
He's Dizzy.
I mean, it's like in Dizzy Gillespie? And I went, yeah. And I went, okay. So my mom takes me up to this very big home in Beverly Hills at Roxbury and Lexington, still there. And Lucille Ball answers the door.
You're like...
And my mom looks at me like, with this look like, Dizzy? And she goes, hi, Mrs. Pena. This is my son, Chris. Oh, come in, Chris. Yeah. So,
Chris. Wow.
So, that was the beginning of it. She liked me. She was very dubious a lot about Desi's friends.
Right.
The people, the users, the takers. And I was just a guy who liked to do bits with Desi. Desi was funny.
Right.
And we had a very, his older friend, became my friend Dean Martin, son Dino Martin, was hysterical.
Oh, you're such an insufferable fucking name dropper. Okay, Chris, go ahead.
These are the people I grew up with, as opposed to you little folk. And, like your dad wasn't huge. You ran for vice president. You came from a big thing.
I didn't grow up in Hollywood, Bel Air.
You grew up in government
Wood. No. Oh, what are you doing?
I'm taking...
Oh, okay, that's... No, that's rosé. Don't mix.
I thought you were not supposed to mix vodka and wine or beer
that's
and
Chardonnay. That's rosé. I am horrified.
Okay, I'll wait.
Just put it back until you're done with that, mister. And
two wines at one time.
Oh, my God, my mom did that once. I tell you that? We were at a family dinner, and the waiter came with red and wine. He's like, wine? And she's like, yes, both.
The same.
And he was like, what? He's like, she's like, just we were all like,
oh my
we were like,
God.
Oh, in the same glass. He's like in the same. Yeah. This is my mom. Classy with a K.
Great stories with Lucy.
So
one time Desi and I in seventh grade were getting a bunch of girls in the back of that station wagon that took us home every day to go up to another pool party, right? This was a great way to see girls in bathing suits and hang out and maybe make out.
Man whore.
Oh. Yeah, I was a kid whore. So all the girls would want to come up to Desi's house. So, it was great. But we came up with this great idea to do this thing where we could get girls like in a casting couch situation.
Oh,
like, let's start a play.
Oh, and I thought of Lucy starting another show.
let's
you were a man whore.
We were horny. I mean, come on, hormones were coming out of our body. So one day, a lot of girls got stuffed in the back of the station wagon to go up to a pool party on Friday, always Fridays. And the nun saw this, that we were all what she called horned in. I don't know what that ever meant. I get the
horned
in together. Right. So, and she started blowing her whistle at the end of the street going, come back here. And we were like, bye.
See ya.
We drove off to Desi's house and had the pool party with the chicks.
Right.
And Monday morning, we come back to school. And on the blackboard is like, well, Crispin and Desi Arnaz, please come.
Please
to,
report to us
immediately. To the principal, who happened to be our teacher as well. So this was eighth grade, I remember, because she was the principal and our eighth grade teacher. So so she said, I want to see both of your parents. So my mom and Lucille Ball went down to the principal's office to talk about this matter of girls being horned in the back of the station wagon. And we went, Desi and I just let mom take care of it.
Yeah.
So my mom kept quiet, and Lucy did all the talking, defending us, going, what are you trying to do? Stop a normal affinity toward the opposite sex? What are you trying to do? And she said this to him, to her, it, the nun, what are you trying to do? Turn them into homosexuals? And the nun went habida habida, habida habida, and did the cross and on her face, and everything was cool. We were never bothered about it. Right.
Lucy didn't have a problem with homosexuals,
But my mom.
That was just a ploy.
Yeah.
He's not going to turn on Lucy.
No. So, when we did Some Like It Hot, I came up with this idea, Desi, another casting session. We'll have girls come over for Some Like It Hot. He goes, what do you mean? We're going to do the movie? I said, no, we'll make it a musical. There's a lot of music in it. He said, okay, cool. So we get girls back over to the little guest house where we auditioned them, and they're literally on a couch. And we're like 13. And Lucille Ball comes in.
Mini
man
whore.
What are you guys up to?
What are you doing? Was this in her Mr. McGillicuddy years?
Yeah, Desi blames it on me. Oh, Chris came up with this great idea to cast kids from our class, our school, into Some Like It Hot. Some Like It Hot as a musical? Yeah, okay. So the next day, we have another casting session. She comes in with 8 scripts by Billy Wilder of Some Like It Hot, all Xerox. She's like, okay, here, you're going to do... And she starts directing. She was totally blowing our scene with hitting on these chicks. Who would turn down Lucille Ball's direction and help? We did. Huh. You know why? Man, boy whores.
Boy whores. Wait, so she saw you when you were 14 playing an 80-year-old man in a musical.
Yes,
told you you were a little genius.
Well, yeah, that's what she said to me. But that's kind of like, that gave me a lot of inspiration. Yeah, it was Desi's sister's high school, Immaculate Heart, not too far from here, where we were the only men in the play. It was basically a lot of women in it because it was an all-girls school. But we'd be all around girls again. So this was always the motivating, basis of our acting and doing anything theatrical. It was hit on chicks. And we went to an all-girls school to do this. He became the romantic lead in a musical. The boyfriend, I became the character lead. I played an 80-year-old man who was a dirty old man and hitting on young women. So after the show, my parents are in the green room, and my brother, and they're hugging me, and then I see the shock of red hair coming at me in a pink jumpsuit. She looked, she was pre-Hillary Clinton with the jumpsuits. And she always used to, hold both of my cheeks like this and go, you know, you're going to be a good boy. You're going to be, don't get in trouble. She would like be kind of like, you know, a mom figure in some ways, like, don't blow it.
Don't
fuck this up. But she came to me this time, putting her hands on both of my cheeks, saying, you're a little genius. And that was the motivating factor, or at least it was the confirming thing in me that said, oh, I got to get into comedy, because I heard laughs that night.
Right.
And the first play I'd ever done. Crack. And I went, oh, my God, that was the best feeling ever to, you know what it's like when you first
No,
hear
I don't, but I've heard
well,
of it.
Well, I heard you.
Listen,
used to.
So, but at 13, you started Chris Pena's Beverly Hills Players with Desi.
I know.
And Lucy would supply props, breakaway bottles, and guns, fake guns for the shows.
Yeah, props from CBS, from Desi Lu.
I love it.
Remember, she owned Desi Lu at this time. She was a co-owner with Desi of Desi Lu Studios.
Right.
Now, you know what shows they made there? Star Trek. Yeah. So when we used to go down to see his mom's show being taped, and I did it so much, I got kind of bored. So I'd walk down the aisle of where all the sound stages were, and there was this one open door, and there was the bridge of the USS Enterprise.
God, oh my God.
With the yellow tape around it, you know, hot set. So I look around, and I go, what the fuck? I'm going to go sit down. I'm 13, and I'm ambitious. And I sat down and started going right into, like, you know, Captain Kirk's stuff, like, my ship.
You know, my ship.
My ship. Spock. You know, so
we were saying that's what it's like in
dialogue in the chair, the real original chair, and now I look back and on all this, and I go, oh my God, I had balls, and that's the reason I think I succeeded in getting certain circles, because I'm funny and I'm ballsy, and I want to be surrounded
by
really
grew up with Lucille Ball. Who are you fucking intimidated by? Nobody.
I know. I mean, it's like, you know, I had good mentors or. You know, adult figures,
right?
Whatever you want to call them in my life, you know.
I love your 21st, your friend's 21st birthday party, which was Dean Martin's son, Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
You met John Lennon, Bowie, Elton, Elizabeth Taylor, Ringo, Harry, Brian Wilson.
Harry Nielsen. Yeah.
Okay, so
what happened?
What was that like chatting with John Lennon?
It was Ricky's surprise party, 21st birthday. His mom had. Planted. So Dino, Desi, and Billy, a band, a little teenage band back then, kind of reunited with Mel Torme's son and me singing Birthday by Paul McCartney, the Beatles, to Ricky. So we rehearsed it that afternoon, forgot about it, came back to the party at 8, and I'm coming in with my friend Steve Torme, and we see nothing but old people. Like, it was all like Dean Martin's mom's, you know, mothers and fathers and adults. And I'm already now in my early 20s, but still, you know, it's like 1974, and I'm going, oh man, this sucks, but we're going to do that song later and he'll like it. And so Dean was there, Dean Martin, and he was already divorced with Jeannie, but he was there because Dino was his pride and joy. So we started getting bored and going to the bar. We started drinking
these
Greyhounds, I remember.
What's a Greyhound?
It's vodka and grapefruit juice.
Oh, okay.
I thought you would know
that. That was a screwdriver.
Oh, Vanessa knows.
Yeah.
I
thought you would know.
She drinks bourbon old man drinks at noon.
Oh, you know that.
I love old fashioned.
Sometimes.
All right. Well, so then the party got good. I was happened to come out of the bathroom and the front doorbell rings. And I'm in the foyer. And I open up the door and standing there is Elizabeth Taylor holding David Bowie's hand.
And they say to me, am I at a fucking wax museum?
And David Bowie says, happy birthday, Ricky. And I go, I'm not Ricky, but thank you. Come in, won't you? And I run over to Steve and I go, oh my God. And he goes, I saw who came in. Well, then the flood came. Brian Wilson, Carl Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
The brilliant Brian Wilson. And Harry Nielsen, Ringo Starr came in. And Elton John, Bernie Taupin.
Fuck.
Everybody made this stupid 21st birthday party because they all happened to be in town at the same time.
Wow.
So I'm seeing David, Elton, Elizabeth Taylor, just, you know, kibitzing. You know, oh, there's
hanging
something.
Out.
So we would, like, with our drinks, kind of edge over and not, like, mock talking, like mouth like we were saying stuff so we could hear their conversation. I heard John Lennon talking to, and Jen, okay, then John Lennon comes in, and I went, okay.
All right.
I'm check. Going outside my body now. Yeah. So I see John Lennon and Brian Wilson, two geniuses, talking. They got to be talking about amazing shit.
So right, you're like, we edge over again. Can I interject?
and we edge over, and Brian is telling John, so I told the cop, fuck you, and I whipped down my pants, and I showed him my ass. And John turned to the other people, and he went, good story. And I laughed, and wow. So then, long story short, yes, I did speak to John Lennon. I made my move. I saw him go to the bathroom, and there was a couple people in front of him. So he's waiting in line to go to the guest bathroom. And I said, this is my opportunity. So I went up to him. I went, Mr. Lennon, I just got to tell you, your music is, as growing up, the Beatles and you, it changed my life. I loved you guys. You came at such a great time because our president had just been assassinated four right. months before you hit Ed Sullivan's stage. And I just want to tell you, thank you, man. And he lowered his glasses because he was wearing all black, a black beret and a long black coat. And he said, thank you. What's your name? And I said, Chris Pinna. And he goes, do you have any new album? And I went, yeah, well, I don't know, not yet, but, it's that rock and roll thing. Because, yeah, no Beatle crap. It's all oldies. And and that was it. And I saw myself go outside my body
right.
and hover above me and look
You're
down
like,
and go,
I've died. I've died,
and I'm looking down at the best part of my life. I'm talking to the man when I was like 11
yeah.
that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Wait, wow. So you've done, I mean, you did a improv workshop with Robin Williams.
Mm. See, Harvey Lembeck.
Yeah. yeah I was just going to say, you've done some shit. You've known some legends.
I got to work with legends. Unfortunately, I wasn't one of them, but.
yes, you are.
I had such great opportunity my whole life, having access.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to work with. Incredibly
because your father
people.
Was in the mafia, obviously. That's why you lived in Bel Air.
So called ran a flooring company. Wink. Just don't hurt me, Rocco. Anyway, I.
Sorry, just kidding.
Yeah, I had opportunities, and I started doing stand up in '78 after my second gig ever. I got
right.
hired as a regular by Bud Friedman.
Yeah.
Because I did a very fearless. Bit called Jesus Christ Last Supper Show, where I came out as a Catskill comic Jesus, and I went, wait, is he 12 nut also a bash for me? And, what are we drinking? Water?
I love
Bud. Well, let me change that. Check it out. Do you know anyone? It's a great year. One. Thank you.
I did a bunch of evening at the improvs. I loved it. My favorite night was when Jerry Seinfeld got up. We were all at the improv in, West Hollywood, and the yeah. lights went out, and Jerry Seinfeld was like, well, this is what happens when a Jew, pays, I always think it's a good idea when a Jew opens up the show, because, he tried to do comedy and bring on Jerry Seinfeld, and then the lights went out, and he's like, well, we got a Jew paying the light bill, and doing the opening act.
Wow. Oh, man. Yeah, no, but the Harvey Olympics class was great, because, Monday night class, I'll never forget it. I left stand-up for a little while. I did it till like 1980, from 78 to 80. And then I discovered improv, and I went, oh, my God, this is more me as an right. actor interacting with other actors in an improvisational fashion. So that all worked and be funny. So in this class was Robin Williams, John Ritter, Robert Romanus.
He was the sweetest man. He was the sweetest man in the world to me, John Ritter. Nicest man
great,
in Hollywood?
Sweetest guy.
Yeah.
Like Henry Winkler. One of the Henry's like one of the sweetest guys ever.
Yeah.
And that was nice to have grown in learning how to do improv with those guys around. And then I started a group with Rick Overton.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. In 82 or 83, I met Rick Overton. We were both cast in an improv. Group, some silly name like ha-has, hee-hees.
Milk through the nose.
Whoa-whoas. And, oh, look, there they are. You know, that was another name that didn't work.
Here's my favorite story. You worked, Fred Willard joined you for a gig you did at the Pomona Fair. Horrible gig. Rednecks yelled the N-word at the black performer in our group. You all walked off stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tony Edwards was the wonderful actor.
Oh, I love him.
You know Tony, right?
Yes.
And it was the most, I had never experienced such open racism.
Right, until now, until the Trump administration.
I was going to say, until Trump and his cabinet. And, yeah, it was like, not this group anymore, the hee-hee-ho-ho group. You know, I said, Rick, we're going to bring improv to the improv.
Right.
So, and it had been done before with dear friends of mine from Off the Wall. But let's bring it back. So I knew Rita over at the improv, or the general manager, and she got us hooked up there, and we did improv
and you are
Friday
literally,
and Saturday nights.
Well, you're beloveds with all my beloveds, including Rick Overton, including... All right, okay, now you're not mixing now. That's good.
No,
go ahead.
No.
Okay. But you're still bogarting her rosé. That's
no,
okay.
No.
Just kidding.
Oh, great. You have a guest come on, and then you admonish them. Mm. That's a nice
just
touch.
In a nice way. Nice touch. Just in a disciplinary way. Okay, here's my point. So you're beloveds with all beloved, not just Rick Overton and friends. Chris Bono, who's here all the time.
I love
Catherine Michon, who's my good friend
Catherine
for many
Michon
years.
Catherine Michon was in our improv group.
Yes, many years.
At the improv right. with Chris Bono.
You became friends with Sam Kinison, who I knew
Sam
very
was in my
well
acting
back
class.
In my day. Right.
And it blew my mind.
Yes.
His first assignment was to have a slow build argument with Sam Kinison. You know, his wife had done a... Sammy, a slow build argument. He came on stage, and hi, honey. It was all about her, banging up the car. And he goes, hi, honey. Anything happen today? And she's going, no, not really. Oh, really? Because he had seen the car being damaged. So he brought in on his very first seat, and all of us in the class. By the end of the scene, he was, I hope you taste your own blood. After being hit by an 18-wheeler.
Hope you slide in a gas truck and taste your own blood.
Yeah. There's the line. And when I heard that in class, I looked around. I was crying with laughter because this guy just...
Right. He was so... I mean, and that's the thing. Even as a woman, you're like, oh, I shouldn't laugh at this, but oh, my God, he makes...
Oh, my God.
Because he was so inappropriate. Just like, you know, this just sort of rage about exes that we all sort of relate to.
Oh, my God.
But you're like, oh, as a woman, I should have. I was like, oh, my God, that's...
One of the greatest parts of his act, he said, you got to see this new bit I do now. I bring a phone up on stage at the store, and I call an ex-lover live. And if, you know, so he finds somebody in the audience, right? He says, who is the person that broke your heart? That's how he started.
Right.
And people go, Sue, Jim, Dave, Terry, you know, and... I'm like, wow, where's this going? And next thing I know, he gets the phone number of the ex, and confronts, because usually, like, yeah, my girlfriend cheated on me with my best friend, okay? So he called the girlfriend and still give her shit. And I saw that live. It was piped through, right?
Shit.
The speakers, you could hear her. She could probably hear the audience just howling. But... you know, he's at a club doing this, and I went, oh, my God. So, yeah, when I saw
his
act, I
went up to
him.
Nothing better than Sam Kinison calling your ex, right?
When I saw him in class, I was so amazed by this guy's energy, just like Robin. They both had this tremendous energy. That they were a force of nature.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's I'm driven to be close to those people. I don't mean to sap up your energy, but could I get new?
Can I suck off your energy?
Can I suck your energy?
I need to suck you dry.
I love when you say so, and so he went, I really like your characters, man. And so we got high after class. Next thing I know, he says, I'm the doorman at the comedy store. Come and see my act. I'm at midnight in the main room. At midnight. Okay, so I bring two of my best friends. And, oh, my God, he kicked ass. He only had a half a room, which is pretty good at midnight in the main room. And... my friends were just bowled over. Yeah. And I just thought, here's a new comic. Get ready for it.
No, he was, I mean, I was there for all of it. I've told this story on previous happy hours, but I just, you know, I was like a little kid out of college entering the phone at Yuck Yucks. It used to be like the running, you know, bet is Kenneth going to show up or not for the Yuck Yucks gig in Buffalo. He would show up late, but he would fucking blow everybody's doors in. And when we had him on, I was, you know, Brother Wheeze and Sister Sleaze and Rochester. He used to come in, and you could tell I'd been up all night, and they were like, Jesus Christ, he's like pussy. Like, he just would come in.
I know, I couldn't
but
spend
he was,
more.
But he just made me laugh, and he was like, I remember he did, I've told the story before, but he did like 20 minutes on me at his show in Rochester about, I just fucked Sister Sleaze this morning. Oh, she couldn't get enough. Oh, oh. And her kept on backing up. She's like, it's not enough. Oh, oh. And then fuck her again. Oh, oh. And I was like, oh, my God. And I thought, like, the funny thing is I thought, the interesting thing is I thought, that was so generous because he knew I was this local radio thing that would be a huge thing for me. Even though you go, if you're a feminist, you go, that was awful. But you go, oh, my God. He made me 10 times more famous than I was because he was, like, making me a star.
If he liked you, he was going to be warm and he's going to be helpful.
Yeah.
You know, he started, like, a little improv thing at the Comedy Store. I kind of left and joined, you know, left the improv to kind of, like, sneak over to the store and work with them on one night a week, you know.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. But, yeah, I also thought he was a really good actor.
Yeah.
And you can see
I watched him at, like, Buffalo Yuck Yucks, like, when he started, and this whole phenomenon started where it was like, holy fuck, man, he is just insane. There's something, like, insane about his energy that was just...
The funniest funeral.
You know, even, here's this liberal woman, like, I couldn't stop laughing. You could not laugh at him. He was so inappropriate. He was so... Right? I mean, remember the whole, like, fucking
behind
someone when they're dead?
One, two,
remember that
three?
Whole thing? Like, oh, you're already dead. And you're like, oh, what's happening? Oh, they're fucking me when I'm dead.
Oh, he had a bit, and he never did it, because I, you know, because we used to kind of, you know, throw ideas together. We wrote a little together, but it was mostly just kind of admiring each other. I think I was a big fan of his, and he really tried to push me. I said, I don't do stand-up anymore, because, Chris, you're fucking funny. You got to go up in front of Mitzi. I go, oh, I'm an improv guy. I don't know if I want to go to the store and do that. So I did. I wrote like a new 15 minutes, right?
Right.
Fill up the belly room. He's there with Mitzi in the booth. And I kick ass. I killed. And he comes up to me after, and he looks kind of like, you know, down. And I was like, what? I kicked ass. He said, oh, no, man, you were great. I said, what did Mitzi say? He said, well, she's not going to hire you as a regular, and because you remind her of someone who once fucked her over. And I went, see, this is why I left stand-up comedy, buddy. I'd rather do improv and keep acting and do voices. And,
right.
And because this comedy scene, it's always the people around the comedy that are the biggest problem.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, it's not the comics. I love you guys. I love everybody's in the business, most of them.
David Feldman, you've done our other beloved.
I love
David Feldman. You've
done the radio show, the David Feldman over at KPFK, a real progressive leader. And I was proud to be over there. That was one of my favorite gigs ever, working with Frank Conniff and Dan Pasternak and just a whole bunch of wonderful people and guest stars like Robin. Robin always came back in my life ever since we began because of Rick. Because they were best friends.
Rick
Robin
Overton,
and Rick Overton were best of friends. Robin looked up to Rick.
I know.
And they could riff for an hour, hour and a half in front of Golden Gate Park, thousands of people, and make everybody happy. And they were a love couple. I just, you know, I just wish. Because when he joined us, we all got better on stage.
Yeah.
It was with this improv group that I started at the improv. Called Rick Overton and Friends. Robin would join us if he was doing a film in
Robin
town.
Williams, everybody, if you've
Robin,
just tuned
Robin.
In.
Oh, this is great. I'm in town. I can help. And I remember one time he was doing that photo, one-hour photo where he...
Yeah.
Remember, he
creepy,
cut his hair really...
Man.
Yeah, creepy character. He cut his hair real short. It was white eyebrows. And we were doing a benefit at the improv. And... And so Rick, before the show, says, Robin wants to come up with us. I went, great. You know, where is he? He pointed out in the corner, and it didn't look like Rob. I went, that's not Robin. He, no, 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 he wants. So I always loved when he came on our shows because we all rose to his quality, I guess, his level. It made us better. I remember always, he always felt great about this. I would always tease the audience. I'd go, hi, everybody. Welcome to Rick Overton and Friends. And I'd introduce the cast. And then I'd say, and we have a new guy coming up.
A new guy.
A new guy.
Try to support him.
Yeah.
Try to give him a little love.
You know, make this guy feel good.
Yeah.
The improv thing is, you know, a little new. And so I'd set him up. And this was at the benefit. I'll never forget the response. I said, so make him feel good. Robin Williams. And this collective gasp. And then it all hit him. Oh, my God, we're going to see Robin.
Oh, my God. Media, yeah.
We never got applause before we said a word on stage. But with Robin,
oh my God.
You got your, you know, applause and screams before the show. So right away, you're pumped. And, yeah, I mean,
well,
he was always
yeah.
so supportive. Like when I did a sketch with Rick at the UCB, I hear this one guy laughing really hard. I played... No Country for Old Men. What's your Javier Bardem?
Yes.
I put on that Prince Valiant wig and did a scene that happened in the gas station. I rewrote it and made it where I do a magic trick instead of a flipping of the quarter. I take a sponge ball out of Rick's ear, who's the clerk, and but it's all done with the actual dialogue. It was I sold it straight. So I hear this laugh for a second. I said, it sounds like Robin when I'm on stage. So I did the bit. We were well received. I went back to the dressing room. And I'm taking off the Prince Valiant Javier Bardem wig, and Rick says, no, no, keep it on, dude. And I go, why? He says, somebody wants to see you at it. And Robin comes in, just cracking, goes, oh, Pinna, amazing, Pinna, you're amazing. And I went, he says, give me the look. And I just gave him the Javier Bardem No Country for Old Men look. Cracked up, big hugger, you know, always yeah. hugged, took us Aww. Out to sushi afterwards, and we didn't say one word about show business. It was all about
wow.
other shit, political.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
real Robin
yeah.
comes out, where it's a sweet, yeah. understanding, progressive liberal. You know, I just loved his take. We were saying, what if everything goes to shit?
We need him. We need him now. This
yeah.
is what the tragedy is.
I know.
Right?
It's like... We have others covering,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
He wanted to go
what,
out.
What, Chris, tell us your story. Ever been married? Ever had children? What's your deal?
Not in this state.
Do we need to hit you? Do we need to hook
children.
You up?
Well...
What?
I was...
All sex is what?
No. What are you asking me exactly?
Have you ever been married? Do you have kids?
Oh, no, no,
What's
no.
What's happening?
No, no, none of that. I was like married to a girl named Lisa Coburn.
Okay.
And it was 15 years.
Oh,
so that's
James
like,
Coburn's daughter.
Right. And it was like 15 years. So that's like what? 7 Hollywood marriages?
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Right.
So
lot.
I think I did great.
Long relationship.
And no, but he was also like a great guy. He got me my voice agent. Besides
he seems his work like he would guy. Kick your ass if you were bad to his daughter.
Oh, he's the coolest guy in the room. He was like 70, and he'd walk in and go, oh, well, I'm not getting laid. Look at this guy. You know, no, he's not really there, Steph. I was just doing a
all right.
gesture.
All right, got it.
Okay.
No, I thought James Coburn was there. Sorry, yeah. sorry. I'm confused.
Miss
anyway.
Him so much. He was just such a cool dude.
Oh, all right. But never wanted to have kids, or you did?
No, never wanted to. I was too selfish for that.
Yeah.
My career.
No, most
no,
of
I'm
us
kidding.
Are.
No, I just thought I would be... the worst doting father. I would be like, you cannot walk across the living room without holding my hand. You know, I
yeah.
think I would be
That'd
the
be
most
weird.
Protective dad
weird,
out in the world, you know.
Yeah.
If I could just keep
I would always
child.
Tell my kid that they were sick and they had to stay in a bubble. I'm too high strung.
Oh,
I'm too
no.
high strung. I'd be afraid something happened. Just be like, I'm sorry, you're so sick and I really, it's going to be great to stay in this bubble.
You know, I, at one point.
It's for the best.
I did want to get best. Married to a woman and we, after, like, what, a 15-minute conversation, I went, I know, it was a ridiculous idea. She turned me around, like, no, you don't want to do that.
No.
And I know, but, you know, it's like, I didn't, since I didn't want children, and if the woman I had fallen in love with wanted to get married and have children, I would have done that.
Right.
She, of course, would have to raise them. I would be in a separate apartment.
Because you're a mess.
In Brentwood.
Right.
But,
right, you're a comedian. That's how we are.
That's and no, I just never got around to that. And I've had 3 great loves in my life. I mean, I've had
what's going on now, Chris? What do we need to do? Do we need to hook you up? Are you good?
You can get me to stop weeping into my pillow at night. If you can do that. Is there anybody can?
Honey.
No. I'm fine. In fact, I don't want to date somebody just like on those Match.com or whatever. I've never gone to one of those. Okay, Grindr once, but
okay, once, just to once, see. Just to see, just the tip,
see.
Just the tip, just
so
to see,
speak.
Just
the tip.
I don't know.
It's just
okay.
The tip. I swear.
All right. How do we follow you on for whatever you need? How do we follow you on Twitter?
Well, just ask the NSA. Hey.
Hey.
Sorry. you follow me? You follow me on Twitter at Pinley McPinley, Chris Pinna. On Facebook, Chris Pinna, P-I-N-A, like okay. Pina Colada.
All right.
It's gotten Americanized. I know you can say Pina. That's including the tilde. But generations ago, that little squiggly thing over the end.
What kind of Ferner are you exactly?
Yeah. My grandparents sold it, the tilde, to an Argentinian family that
they're
really
Argentinian.
Needed it. Yeah.
Okay.
No. They're Ferner. Spanish and French.
Spanish and French.
And so basically, I am Spanish and French. So basically, I surrender
so
immediately
you're fucking toast.
Before a bullfight.
You're fucking toast under Trump. See ya. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
this will be the last time I see you.
Oh, God. No,
don't call me for the deportation.
I'm a little dark, so I worry about that, you know.
You're a little swarthy. I don't know
you.
I gotta say, even with this video exists, I don't know you. I don't know how you got in here. Obviously illegally.
I said, you know, back when 9/11 happened, I said, should I grow a beard? And Rick went, no! Do you want to die?
You went, are okay. Delightful, Chris Pina or Pina, whatever it is your alias is.
You know, it's just call me Grit.
I love you.
Bye,
Chris. Happy hours.
Yeah! Woo! Have fun, baby.